Welcome to Managing Safety, brought to you by the FAA Production Studios, a joint effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and the FAA Safety Team, the FAST Team. This talk show addresses strategies for thinking in today's complex aviation world. Now, here's Amy Loboda, editor of Aviation for Women magazine and FAST Team representative, Fort Myers, Florida, who is today's host.
Welcome to FAA's Managing Safety Podcast. This is Amy Loboda. I am the editor-in-chief of Aviation for Women magazine. Welcome to the new year. We have here today Janine Cochin, PhD. She is with Aviation Research Training and Services, Inc., and she wants to talk to us a little bit about some of the terrific research she's done and the activities she is working on a worldwide basis, harmonizing flight training methodologies. Now, before I start, Janine, let's talk a little bit about your background and how you came to realizing that the flight training methods throughout the world are not harmonized. So let's start in the beginning with a little background.
Well, Amy, thank you very much for the opportunity to be with you today. My background is in flying is as a flight instructor and a designated pilot examiner. From an academic standpoint, however, I'm a human factors researcher, and one of the areas of my studies is in training in general, primarily in aviation training. So from the aspect of being a flight educator and an evaluator, I've had the opportunity to teach and fly with a number of students both here in the United States and throughout the world. And in the past 10 years, we've seen a shift in the demographics of our flight students and our aviation professionals coming through, especially in the United States, where in the past we had maybe 5% of the students would come from outside of the country. And today, approximately 85% of the check rides that I give in the North Florida Flight Standards District Office, which is the majority of Florida, 85% of those check rides are now to students that are not from the U.S. Now, so that's the background and how I got interested in looking at the differences in flight training methodologies throughout the world, even though the students that I examine or evaluate come through the FAA, the U.S. FAA system. We also end up talking to the students and working with students who hold other certificates. So that's how that I got to the point of, well, how is this being done? And if we're training students here in the U.S. that are eventually going to go back to other countries and finish a training program and end up flying throughout the world, we need to take a look at the standards that we hold throughout the world, not just in the United States, in the Federal Aviation Administration, but as a global industry instead.
Were you finding that these students had trained elsewhere and were just coming to the U.S. to finish their training?
Good question, Amy. No, not usually. That wasn't the case. What we generally find are students coming from other countries who are in flight academy programs where they have been pre-screened. They've taken evaluations in their own country to determine if they would be eligible, once their flight training is complete, to go into a commercial aviation job. So that's where a large majority of the students who come here to the United States to train are coming from. Periodically, or a small percentage of the students do start flight training in another country and come here to either finish up or to obtain a U.S. pilot certificate, and they may fly here in the U.S. or they once again may go back to their own country. One segment of the population that we see coming from other countries to obtain U.S. certificates are those that own a U.S. registered or an N registered aircraft, and they want the privileges of being able to fly that N registered aircraft in other countries other than the country where they reside, so that they to be able to do that, they'll need a U.S. pilot certificate. So that is another small percentage of the pilots that we see coming to the U.S.
Are you finding that there are significant inconsistencies among the different pilots when they come to take that check ride in terms of what they already know?
When they come to take the check ride, to answer your question, yes. There is a wide spectrum of knowledge, skills, and abilities for these pilots. And however, there's nothing that's consistent about the inconsistencies. There'll be excellent pilots and not so good pilots from the same flight school, from the same country, from the same instructor. So as far as, is there a real trend that we can identify from one source? The answer is no. Okay, so what that brings to mind is, well, perhaps we are not focusing as much as we should on what I call the end product. What is the criteria? What are we looking for when we certify or license a pilot? And instead of taking the training curriculum and saying we should have 10 hours of solo for this level of certificate or license, we should have instrument training and this much, instead of looking at what the training program is, we should define the outcome first. We want our pilots to be able to fly, think, make decisions, and perform to this level. Now, you're probably thinking to yourself, being a U.S. pilot yourself, well, we have the practical test standards. Isn't that what we evaluate? Isn't that how we evaluate our pilots in the U.S.? And absolutely it is. But once again, the criteria are not necessarily global in their aspect, both from a standpoint of, does it encompass all of these skills that we're looking for in the pilots that we're certifying today? Is that evaluation tool keeping up with the changes in our aviation and environment and our aviation industry? And then from the other aspect of global, how does it fit? How do our practical test standards and criteria for certifying pilots fit with the criteria used in the rest of the world?
Those are all really good questions, Janine. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with FAA's Managing Safety and get the answer to some of those questions.
Thank you.
Now, let's rejoin Amy Labota and Managing Safety, brought to you by the FAA Production Studios.
Welcome back to FAA's Managing Safety Podcast. Your host today is Amy Labota. I am the Editor-in-Chief of Aviation for Women magazine and an FAA Fast Team representative as well. I have here with me today Janine Cochin, PhD. She has put together a study called Harmonizing Flight Training Methodologies, and she has become a real activist and asks the question, does the practical test standards do what it needs to do, and is it global? Are we really training pilots to the same standards all over the world? And I think the answer is no.
I would agree with that. And we being the U.S. flight training community versus training organizations throughout the world. Now, that's not to say that we do it particularly better in the U.S. We may just have a different methodology. For example, in many countries where there is a need for a number of pilots in very short order within the next few years because their aviation industries are growing at such a rapid rate, there are different types of pilot certification programs, such as the multi-crew pilot license, that is a, if you will, a faster track to the right seat of an airliner. However, it is based on training science. In the early reports from the multi-crew pilot license projects and training have been quite favorable. Now, as a seasoned airline captain, you know, how would I feel of having a new first officer in my right seat that perhaps only has 300 hours total time flying airplanes, and the majority of that time was in a flight simulator? Well, once again, if we look at the outcome, if that pilot meets the criteria and has the knowledge, skills, and abilities, decision-making, risk management skills that are required to safely co-pilot an airliner throughout, say, European airspace or Asian airspace or Indian airspace or the world's airspace, then that program is successful.
I have a question, though. In the U.S., for pilots who are piloting overseas, they're both captains.
Okay.
How does that feel?
Well, the question is technically they would hold a type rating. They would
that
have
is
to hold
correct.
A.
They both had the same check, right?
Correct. And in the world of airline training and checking, in the past 40 years, it's always been the first officer's check ride has been identical to the captain's check ride, and they're trained to the same standards, where there really was no difference in the evaluation of a first officer or a captain in the airline training and checking world. Now, once again, if we're going to, in the parts of the world where multi-crew pilot license pilots are eligible to fly for an airline, you know, their training and checking over the years of them gaining the experience in the airline may be a little bit different. But you also may be thinking to yourself, well, here in the U.S. now, with the change to having to obtain more flying hours and an airline transport pilot certificate prior to being hired by an airline, how does that fit in? Isn't that diametrically opposed
to the
multi-crew pilot license?
Yeah.
Well, even that particular requirement that, in my opinion, was mostly a response to one particular accident that really was the one of many in a trend that we should have been seeing all along the way, just increasing flight hours or the requirement for flight hours does not necessarily make for a more expert pilot.
No, it does not. And in fact, that was probably evident if you looked closer into that particular accident. We're referring to the Colgan accident.
Correct.
Accident.
And that was just, once again, one of many. And instead of, once again, flight training methodologies, it's not, we can get to the same endpoint via a number of different training programs, whether it is the U.S. system that we already have, whether it's a multi-crew pilot license. But once again, we need to define the parameters of what my research for the last 25 years has been into in search of the expert pilot. You know, what is an expert pilot? Do we need an expert pilot to be, or a pilot to be expert prior to being hired in an airline? But what composes the expertise that we're looking for in a pilot prior to them, one, even soloing an airplane, to becoming an Airbus A380 captain? What are we looking at here, and how do we measure those knowledge, skills, and abilities? And can it be done in perhaps a wing today in the U.S. or anywhere else throughout the world? That's one of the big questions.
And Janine, my sense is that your research and other research to back it up has actually answered that question. So we're almost to the point where we need to get off our rear ends and actually do something about it. Now, is that an ICAO thing? I mean, the Europeans tried to do it with the JAA, right?
Yes, there has been bits and pieces throughout the world where different groups would work on the problem. However, one area might make some progress. There's been a number of different organizations in the U.S. that have identified the problem and said, well, what can we do about it? And frankly, Amy, I think the answer is to come up with a point person or a point organization to manage the volumes of information, to look at the research that's already been done, and to come up with once again, the outcome criteria, and then say, as long as your training program gets the pilot to this standard, we'll be fine, okay? But we've got so many different groups doing so much very, very good work and research, and in this day and age of the ability to be able to communicate with all of our technology, even as humans, we're not keeping up with the technology and managing the information as we should, which is a problem in all industries today, and it's actually one of the biggest features of learning to fly in today's aviation world, where there's so much information out there. We need to be able to identify what is good, valid, and reliable information in our aviation training. We need to do the same when we're tackling large global aviation problems. So information management is key, and to work as distributed teams and get all of this information to one point, I think we would be able to make much more progress, although ICAO has been working on it for, groups have been working on it for years and years, and there's a new push, if you will, to move forward on it. And as you know, it just, change is very, very difficult. However, as the technology runs away, as our airspace systems are changing so dramatically and so quickly, and you know, here in the U.S. with the next-gen systems, I think it's time for us to revamp and work very, very hard on working together to solve these problems and come up with the outcome-based measurements and criteria for our aviation professionals of the next generation based on the individuals and the applicants and the students that we're going to be seeing over the next 20, 30, and 40 years, and also based on the types of equipment and the types of tasks that they'll be having to accomplish that, unfortunately, even I believe are going to be very, very much different than when I learned to fly over 30 years ago. So,
I hope it is different, honestly. I hope that the little airplanes that we start teaching in are electric. I hope that they have systems that are, you know, efficient and that nobody can turn around and say, oh, you guys are the ones that are polluting or anything like that. Right. You know, I hope that, that it also brings the price of entry down in the next decade. I don't know what happens next. I do worry about it from that, from the perspective of general aviation, which is where so much of my focus is, and yours too, obviously, because you're out there examining. If there aren't people to examine other than just little airline pilots going through the mill, it's going to get boring, isn't it?
It is, and I think you've brought up a very good point that, you know, even I've kind of been drawn into the focus of the airline pilots, where we need to also make sure that as a sport and as a hobby, aviation can be promoted and can be affordable to anyone who might be interested in it, and keep that as an avenue and not, you know, in our quest to make better airline pilots, neglect the, you know, the weekend pilot or the person that is doing it purely for recreation or fun, or even the person who would be using it for business as well. So you're right. We need to keep the, you know, the segments of aviation all going in the same direction.
Absolutely, without compromising training standards at the same time, because there's the absolute realization that a crosswind is a crosswind is a crosswind. And everybody who has to learn to fly in one in a lightweight airplane has to learn to do it to the same standards. Yes or no?
Absolutely. An airplane is an airplane is an airplane. And you're absolutely right. And you know, if you can make a crosswind landing and you're taking a private pilot check ride, it's, you know, you still need to, you've got your standards. If you're taking your ATP check ride, a crosswind is still a crosswind is a crosswind, and you need to be able to evaluate those and make sure that pilot is safe and competent in the equipment that they're flying. And you're absolutely right, because we're all out there in the airspace together. You know, the little airplanes are still out there with the corporate jets and are still out there with the airliners, so we need to understand the basics of flying and the system and the airspace that we're flying in.
Well, Janine, you've done a good thing today, because the FAA's Managing Safety podcast goes out worldwide via the internet. And now I need to get some contact information, because people are going to have questions for you. Where can they reach you?
I can be reached at Kochan, Kochan, at aviation-research.net.
Excellent. Kochan at aviation-research.net. And this is Amy Loboda, host today with FAA's Managing Safety Podcast. thank you very much for taking the time to come in and talk with us. Let us know, is there going to be a meeting in the future? Is there going to be something coming up where people are going to be talking about this? I'd heard something about a society of aviation flight educators meeting this spring.
Correct. SAFE is having a meeting in Atlanta. It's available on the website if you search SAFE, and they're having a meeting, and there are a number of other organizations that are addressing the flight training methodologies and harmonizing flight training methodologies throughout the world. And I think it's a topic that we'll be seeing come up a lot more in the very near future than we have in the past 20 years.
Janine, I'm excited to hear about it. Thank you again.
You're welcome. Thank you, Amy.
We hope you've enjoyed today's Managing Safety, brought to you by the FAA Production Studios, a joint effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and the FAA Safety Team. Please visit our studio website at faaproductionstudios.com to hear past programs.